Okay, let's start our drill. We had questions 53 through, I think, 56. So let's go through those questions. And I'm going to go ahead and call on people this morning, since you all got a good night's rest, ready on the stick to answer these questions. So let's do question 53. And I'll ask Elizabeth, 53. In chapter 10, there's a messianic prophecy which has a dual fulfillment. What is it, and what verse in the New Testament is this verse quoted?
chapter 10, 20 through 23, is the Babylonian remnant, part of the spiritual remnant, is the dual fulfillment.
Right, so the prophecy is that a remnant will return there in Isaiah, and it's also quoted in Romans 10, 20 through 23, and dual fulfillment there. Okay, question 54. Lauren Bogues, let's do 54. Chapters 11 and 12 discuss the Messiah and his rule. This section is divided into five sections. What are they?
Who the king will be, where the place of peace will be found, when the prophecy will be fulfilled, who the recipients of the blessings are, and the song of thanksgiving.
Okay, very good, Lauren. One thing, we'll get to the next question. I'm going to make a comment, but I'll hold that to the next question. Okay, let's go to question number 55. Craig Moore, do you have 55?
No.
Okay, let's try. How about Craig Honorsback? Another Craig. 55. Okay. All right. Open it. Okay, Deanna, 55. Read chapter 11, 6 through 9. What figurative picture is being drawn by Isaiah? Where will this picture take place? Okay, in Zion. Okay, and it's a picture of peace, tranquility. In our class, someone mentioned harmony, the same thing. It will take place in my holy mountain, or as Deanna pointed out, Zion. Those two terms are used interchangeably. It's interesting when we read chapter 11 here, talking about this picture of peace. We didn't talk about this. I don't think chapter 11 discussed what peace is it talking about. Really don't know from chapter 11. But we know from other parts of Isaiah, like we go to Isaiah 53, and we go to Isaiah 9, you know, Christ is the Prince of Peace. And how is he the Prince of Peace? And we go to Isaiah 53 there, and of course it's because it's a peace between God and man by his sacrifice. And so in Zion, we have this peace made possible by Christ. Okay, question 56.
You know, 11, 6 through 9.
Okay.
And you said it will happen in Zion. I presume you're talking about my holy mountain, verse 9. Not that wrong, but the thing is, if you're talking to a premillennialist, they would probably say amen. So, but the question is, when? That's why it seems to me verse 10 is so critical, because he says 10 that day, and Paul quotes that is on 15:12. So it ties it to the messianic work that Christ has done in the redemption of mankind, and not a sign of the future with the way on earth. And so just know in case someone runs across us.
Okay, very good point. Many things Isaiah premillennialists will use to their advantage, and be prepared for that, as Steve pointed out. Verse 10 is a real key period because it talks about the period of time, and as Steve pointed out, and we talked about it, connects that to the messianic era. Okay, question 56. I'll offer this one up. What clothing does the branch wear? Anyone? Jim? Righteousness and faith. Actually, I had on the board. Sorry about that. Okay, let's pick up another question here. Pick up a past question. We'll do question 31. 31. Let's, any volunteers to do 31? Let me read the question. It says, what Assyrian king came to Jerusalem to destroy it during Hezekiah's reign? Was the siege successful, and what happened? We'd like to do 31. Okay, Jim? Okay, Sennacherib, and it was not successful. Right. So King Hezekiah prayed to the Lord, and the angel of the Lord killed 185,000 Assyrians in one night. Okay, open your Bibles. I want to mention something here about this incident here. Go to Isaiah chapter 38, verses 5 and 6. We did a very detailed background of what happened during the four reigns of these kings. But there's always details upon details that you don't come across. And here's one that I want to kind of point out to you. When you read this, we know this historical section in Isaiah starts in 36 through 39. And in chapter 37, it actually talks about the 185,000 angels. I mean, the 185,000 Assyrians that are killed by the angel. And then we get to chapter 38. We read about Hezekiah become mortally ill. And we're familiar with this incident here that, Isaiah comes to him. You're going to die. Set your house in order. Hezekiah prays, and then he's added 15 years of life to his lifetime. When you read this thing, it appears that the assault by King Sennacherib and the killing of 185,000 happens first. Then Hezekiah gets sick, and this is a second incident. But went into detail upon detail. Look at verses 5 and 6. So here's the talking about him being sick. And is talking to Isaiah going to Hezekiah. He says, "Go and say to Hezekiah, thus says the Lord, the God of your father David, I have heard your prayer, I have seen your tears. Behold, I will add 15 years to your life, and I will deliver you in this city from the hand of King Assyria, and I will defend the city." I'm persuaded that when Hezekiah got sick, it would happen actually before the angel destroying the 185,000. What's interesting about that is we've heard this expression, when it rains, it pours. We have several brethren here. When they've had physical hardships, they seem to get more and more and more. Think about King Hezekiah here. We know he was a righteous king. He reinstituted the Passover, sent letters even to Israel to come down, got rid of all the high places, got rid of all the idolatrous worship. You know, very, very right, doing all these things. And then what happens? First, he says, Isaiah comes to him and says, "Sit your house, nor are you going to die." And at the same time, evidently, this assault is happening. So here he has he's done all this good work. Now he says that you're about ready to die. The king's threatening him here. And so I think when you read this, it's actually, this is happening. The assault is actually in its progress, and they have not been delivered from this statement here in 38. So something to think about, how what Hezekiah did. Did you kind of give up his hands and say, "Oh man, I've done all this good. Look, God's going to take my life. Comes by Isaiah. I'm being assaulted. God's not going to protect my nation." Of course, he doesn't give up. He prays to God. And of course, God delivers him in both aspects. Adds 15 years to his life and delivers him from the king of Assyria. Okay, let's go to our lesson this morning. We're on lesson number 13, page 68. Lesson 13, page 68. This section here... We're starting a new section. So remember, we had a 6-point outline. We've already finished the first section, the Lord's charge against Judah and Jerusalem. Now we're entering a second part of the outline. And you can see in your notebooks at the very top, Roman numeral 2, the Lord's judgment against certain nations. That's what this next section is, covering chapters 13 through 27. So here we have 15 chapters devoted to this section, quite lengthy section. Now, something to think about here as we begin studying about this is think about the timing and the audience of when we find this in the book of Isaiah. First of all, remember we divided chapters 1 through 39 during four kings, right? And so this section right in here is happening during, right, Isaiah's writing it during the time of King Ahaz and the rest of it probably during King Hezekiah. We know there's a time reference in the last part of chapter 14. It says in the year that King Ahaz died. So this is when it's being written, during this time frame. And these are judgments against a nation. And as you've done your reading, you know the first one's against Babylon. Well, Babylon's not even a world. We'll talk about that. Not even a world empire. So these are events that are going to happen. Some of them are going to happen way in the future. And here Isaiah is addressing them during this time frame. The other thing to think about here is we know that this letter primarily was written to Judah and Jerusalem. And here we have all these judgments on these other nations. So how does that fit in? If you're writing primarily to Jews in the southern part of the kingdom, here you have all these judgments. Well, the thing to note about that is, we'll come back and talk about that in a minute. So just note that. So the primary audience is Judah. And the last one I have on the overhead slide there is think about the timing. The first judgment we're going to deal with is with Babylon. And just let's think about, from a historical standpoint, where are we at? If we're in the time, actually, some of that's not shown on the slide, but I'll read it. The judgment of Babylon happens in 539 B.C. And this is the time frame right around 725, maybe 720 B.C. This is 187 years in the future. And it's happening right here, you know, 13th chapter. So this probably raises a lot of questions. Why is all this happening here? And we'll talk about that here in a moment. So this section here, this chapter all the way through through 27, there are judgments against 10 nations. I have it on the overhead here. There's judgments against 10 nations. And this, I don't know why it's not shown on the overhead. And there are judgments, and there's actually 11 judgments here. And we have on the overhead all the nations and the chapters where they're covered about. We're going to cover today and on Wednesday. So we have Babylon chapters 13 and 14. Philistine is at the end of chapter 14, just a few verses. Moab chapters 15 and 16. Damascus chapter 17. Ethiopia and Egypt are kind of grouped together in chapters 18, 19, and 20. Then on Wednesday, we'll come back and pick up the rest of this section. You're going to find that Babylon is going to be discussed again. It's repeated in chapter 21. 21 actually has three nations, Babylon, Edom, and Arabia. And then we have Jerusalem in chapter 22 and Tyre 23. Also note that on the Babylon, it's kind of interesting, is that there's actually going to be another chapter in the last half of the book that's going to talk about a judgment of Babylon. So there's actually three times in this book a judgment against Babylon is going to be mentioned. So as you think about this thing, the question comes up to my is, why these judgments? If he's writing to Jews in the southern kingdom, why are these judgments? Why do they happen so early in the book? So first of all, here are some reasons. I don't have this in your notes here. You might want to write down these reasons or just listen. The first one here is that these judgments on these nations, first of all, is not unique to Isaiah. Other prophets, Jeremiah, who was one of the prophets of the exiles, of the remnant that was left in Judah, wrote about judgments against other nations, and many of these same nations, and spent a lot of time doing that in chapters 46 to 51 of Jeremiah. Ezekiel, another prophet of exile, of those in, that were in Babylon, spends chapters 25 to 32 talking about judgments on these nations. And then Amos is interesting. He was a prophet to the north. Remember, there was two prophets toward the end of the northern kingdom. Hosea was the last one. Amos was right before that. Two chapters in Amos are devoted to this. So in God's plan of, you know, here we have the Old Testament. You're talking a lot about the Jewish, the covenant, the Jewish people. A lot of time, a lot of effort is being taken by Jewish prophets talking about judgments on other nations. So why? Why are we finding these judgments here? The first thing you're going to see through here, and it's very evident, is that Jehovah rules the kingdoms of men. This is a message you're going to see. He's in control of their destiny. And you're going to see that. And that's a very familiar story, right? Remember the book of Daniel. Its primary storyline in the book of Daniel was to show that God is sovereign among nations. You get the same message here in the book of Isaiah and some of the other prophets that we mentioned. The other thing, as you've done your reading, you will note here that this is not just, you know, there's a lot of time spent on these judgments. And you're going to find that these judgments are, God's just not going to bring judgment. There's a reason for it. God is holding these other nations accountable to him. And what that means, if he's holding them accountable to them, that means that they're under law, right? How can a just God bring a nation under judgment if they haven't done something wrong? They have to know what they've done wrong. So this tells us that these nations are under law. We know all men and women are under law. Love God, love your neighbor. And these nations, and whether it was additional revelation to them, whatever it was, we don't, definitely the law, the first two laws I just mentioned, maybe other laws, but he's holding them accountable. And does, again, spend a lot of time doing that. And the last probably reason why we find these judgments here is, what about Judah? Judah's plan of bringing the Messiah is going to have to go through these other nations. And so it's a sure message to the remnant and the people in Judah that are going to be the faithful. Assurance to them that Jehovah's plans will come to pass. He controls the nations all around him. He can make whatever things happen to bring about his plan. So I don't know if you thought about why you find this in there, but here are some, I think, some good reasons why we find these judgments and an extensive amount of time and effort spent on them. Okay, one other point before we get into our text here. Hold your finger to where we're at. And in your notebook, go to page 49. And I mentioned this in one of my emails. For those who don't get email, of course, you went and got the note. But go to page 49 in your notebooks. We mentioned one of the characteristics of the book of Isaiah is that it is a geography book. This book will challenge the most knowledgeable Bible student on geography. There are over 100 terms used of geography, people, places, customs, things of those nations. And if you turn in your notebooks to that page that I mentioned here, what we've done here as additional supplemental information for you to read on your own is, first of all, on page 49, our background of nations. We're going to be talking about some of these nations. And a lot of these nations have a long history in the Jewish history books. And so there's a lot of background. Like that first page talks about Amnon. Who was Amnon? Well, we know he was one of Lot's son. But a lot of things happened through the history, quite extensive. And so you have here, as you read this thing, if you already haven't done that, if you run across geographic terms or nations, you go back and read some of the material. It'll give you a lot of background information. If you turn to page 53, I tried my best to catalog every geographical term, a place, river, whatever. So on page 53, there's a table that lists all these geographical terms. It tells you how often they're listed, where they're listed. Is it a city, a nation, a river, a range, a people? What is it a part of, and what is the significance of it? So we're going to cross a lot of geographical terms here today, and you can use this as a reference. So all I've done is use outside sources and things in the Bible to provide a lot of background information, because, you know, as you read these things, you might kind of lose interest, because what is this talking about? I've never heard of this place. And so some of these places may be unique to Isaiah. You may not find any other place that they're mentioned in other parts of the Bible. So that's some background information as we go through this section. And you're going to find this section, 13 through 27, the section has the most geographical terms. And that would make sense, right? If you're dealing with all these different nations, dealing with their cities and their peoples and their customs, you would find that to be the case. Okay, so let's go back to our lessons, page 68. We'll start in lesson 13. Arthur asked me on Wednesday night, he said, sometimes when I show my overhead slides, the letters or the numbers do not correspond to the ones in your notebook. And the reason for that is that your notebooks are numbered. There's usually some additional tasks, which I change the numbering. So Arthur was paying a lot of attention. So what I did from this point forward, any letter or number you see in your notebook will correspond to what's on the overhead. So, you know, another way to see where we're at is just to look at the letter or the number, and that ties directly to what you have in the notebook. Okay, so this first section, this is a chapter summary, covers chapters 13 through 14, and it's an oracle against Babylon. And then it has several sections. It has the section here, destruction coming on Babylon, chapter 13, 1 through 22. And then we have the section, we'll do read a few verses here. It's a call to arms, chapters 13, verses 1 through 5. So let's open our Bibles and let's go to Isaiah 13 and let's just read a few verses and make a few comments on some of these verses here. It starts out, it says, the oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw. So this is the New American Standard. If you have the American Standard or the New King James Version, it has the word burden. One of the sources that, you know, I used many sources in this particular study. As sources, and one of the authors, one of the German authors, Delick, said this about this, and he knew that, of course, he knew the different words using the different versions. This is what he said about this word, and he says he prefers oracle, indicating a verdict of God, a judicial sentence of God. So when we see this word oracle, and as we read these things, these something is not favorable. This is a judgment. It's a heavy burden. Or as an oracle that is a weighty pronouncement of doom. And, of course, where is it coming from? We know it's coming from the Lord. Also note that we mentioned that Isaiah, he sees visions. He's seen a lot of things. Note that this oracle is what he saw. You remember when we started our study in Isaiah 1:1, visions that Isaiah saw. 2:1, the word which Isaiah saw. Now, here the third time, this is something that Isaiah is seeing. He's seeing these oracles, this oracle that he sees. Let's read verses 2 and 3. It says, lift up a standard on the bare hill. Raise your voice to them. Wave the hand they may enter the doors of the nobles. I have commanded my consecrated ones. I have even called my mighty warriors, my proudly exalted ones, to execute my anger. So here we have in verse, first part of verse 2, the standard. Lift up a standard. And hopefully you've been, as you've done your reading, and we've talked about this before, you keep hearing this word standard being repeated. It occurs several times in the book of Isaiah. A standard is just just a banner. King James, I think, actually has the word banner. American Standard has an ensign. And so what it is just, you know, a sign. And what's happening here? What you find here is, using it figuratively, we know it's not a literal flag. It's a figurative thing, but it's a sign that what God is doing here, he's calling these warriors together. Look, verse 3, I've commanded my warriors. These are the Lord's warriors, his consecrated ones. And of course, who's he bringing them against to? He's bringing them against Babylon. Now, Isaiah, in many times when he writes things, he doesn't always give us the answer who are these warriors? Who is he bringing against Babylon? Later on, he will describe who that is. And you just look at verse 17 of the same chapter. Who is that? We know from history, this is what happened. It says, behold, I'm going to stir up the Medes against them. Against who? Babylon. So these are the consecrated ones. These are the mighty warriors. These are God's people that he's going to be using. And again, last part of verse 3, to do what? To execute my anger. We find God is not only angry at his own people for rejecting the law, but he's also angry at these nations for not doing what they ought to do and give God the proper credit for the things that he brought about. And again, let's talk about the timing. As he's writing this thing, he's writing it 187 years in the future. The Babylon Empire is not even a world empire at this time. At this time, it's Assyria as a world empire. They're not even on the world stage. Okay? And he hadn't even talked about them coming and taking the land away. He's going way beyond that time and talking about a judgment on that nation. So again, this is a very similar thing we see in the book of Isaiah from a timing standpoint, how he jumps across the span of time back and forth all the time. You can see where he's jumping to as we read this oracle. Now let's look at verses 4 and 5. It says, a sound of tumult on the mountains, like that of many peoples, a sound of uproar of kingdoms, of nations gathered together. The Lord of hosts is mustering the army of battle. One of our lessons, our third lesson, we talked about words that associated with Jehovah. We find that the Lord of hosts is one of a predominance. And you see very clearly here, it's used in the context of a host being an army. He's assembling this army against Babylon. It goes on in verse 5. It says, and they're coming from a far country, from the farthest horizons, the Lord and his instruments of indignation to destroy the whole land. Okay, so we find this call to arms, this particular section. Okay, the next section here starting in verse 6 all the way through 16. In this section we titled a terror on the day of the Lord. Okay, and let's look at verse 6. Here we have this day of the Lord. It says, wail, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. We know that when the day of the Lord is used in Scripture, that we always have to, don't assume what the meaning is. It always is determined by context. It doesn't always mean the end of time. The day of the Lord in many times is used of judgment. Judgment upon nations. And here it's clear it's a judgment upon the nation of Babylon. But here's a good definition. If you want a good definition of what the day of the Lord is, remember we talked about synonymous parallelism. You can use one line to help you understand the second line. So a good definition of the day of the Lord. What is the day of the Lord here? It's destruction from the Almighty, judgment from the Almighty. And so here you can use this parallelism to help understand this day of the Lord, destruction from the Almighty. Okay, this next section we've already kind of talked about. The Lord's instrument will be the Medes. And starting in chapter, verse 17 through the end of this chapter, verse 22. So he'll describe the Medes and about them coming across. Let's look at this map up here I have on the overhead. Hopefully, We've shown this before. So we want to talk about the Medes and a little history here. This map is also in your book. Cyrus, who was a Median, was located in Media, which is, here's the Caspian Sea, the Black Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, here you got the Red Sea. Here's the Red Sea, here's the Euphrates River. And so Cyrus was here as one of the king of Media. And he went to war against Persia. Persia is actually located down in this, off the slide here. And he united that kingdom, Media and Persia, together. And they're the ones, there's of course the kingdom that came against Babylon. And the first thing they did is they took the city of Babylon. Probably can't see it on the overhead there, but there's Babylon. So first he wars with the area, unites this country. This country right now is like where Iran is at. And so they come across and then conquer Babylon by first taking Babylon. And that all happened, the timing of that. Cyrus, he came to the throne in 559. He defeated the Medians in 549. And then in 539, Cyrus took the city of Babylon. Let's look at verses 17 and 18, the last part of it. We read the first verse. Behold, I'm going to stir the Medes against them, who will not value silver or take pleasure in gold. So evidently, this empire, strikingly, couldn't buy them off. And, of course, they came against the nation of Babylon and defeated it. Okay, let's continue on. Again, this continues into chapter 14. And so the first section, verse 14. So again, we have this judgment. Now, what would the people of Judah think about this thing? Well, here they have this judgment on Babylon. But here we have a section here that talks about that Israel will be restored after Babylon falls. Let's read verse 1 in chapter 14. Okay, it says, when the Lord will have compassion on Jacob and again choose Israel and settle them in their own land, and then strangers will join them and attach themselves to the house of Jacob. We mentioned when you study Isaiah that Isaiah will use different words having the same meaning. So think about this from a history lesson. He talks about Israel. Remember, the northern part of Israel was taken away. This is not referring to northern Israel. He's talking about Jacob. Well, Jacob, had 12 sons. It's not the whole Israel. So he's using Israel and Jacob of Judah. So when you read that, you say, I'm all confused. I thought Israel, the northern, if you use Israel referring to the northern kingdom, yes, it's gone. Jacob's not all his 12 sons. It's only the two sons that were left in the southern kingdom. But he's using those words accommodatively referring to Judah because they're in captivity. The northern kingdom is gone away. Something also very interesting here, sometimes you find these little details in this letter that are very striking. The last part of verse 1, it says, then the strangers will join them and attach themselves to the house of Jacob. It's a very interesting historical statement about these strangers joining Israel. At first, I wasn't aware of who was he referring to. But when the Israelites, Judah, came back out of captivity, came back to their land, you'll find in the book of Esther, you write this verse down, Esther, actually I had it in your notes, Esther 8, verse 17. It talks about how the people, some of the people around in that area actually joined themselves and became Jewish proselytes. And so here Isaiah's writing that hundreds of years before that and talking about a little detail. And how would Isaiah know that? Of course, we know through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. Okay, next section, we find that... Okay, they will be delivered and restored to land. That's the section we just talked about. And this next section, starting in verse 4 through 23, is they will rejoice over the defeat of Babylon. Okay? And again, at this point in time, of this writing, they didn't even know Babylon's world empire. They didn't know they were going to be taken into captivity. They knew it probably through the prophets, but here they're already rejoicing. So you see how Isaiah is writing way in the future about what will happen, how they will feel way ahead of the actual event. Okay, continuing on, after they rejoice over the defeat of Babylon, go in chapter 14, verses 24 through 32 is a section. Hopefully you've read that. The section here, the Lord's purposes shall be carried out. Again, this is not the first time we've seen this message. You know, God's plan is going to come about. It's a repeated theme throughout the book. And then the last part of chapter 14, kind of unusual, that it talks about Philistia or Philistine being taking or having a judgment on that. Note in verse 28, this is one of our time references. It says, in the year that King Ahaz died, this oracle came. It says, do not rejoice, O Philistia. And you go and you read that, and if you already read it, you know, he's going to destroy them. They're going to be wailing. Verse 31, they're going to melt away. And so we have this judgment upon this nation. I had a map, I think, in the presentation, but hopefully you remember where all these countries are at, right? Philistia or Philistine is a country located on the coast from Judah. It's kind of located in the southwestern part of it along the coast. And that's where they're located. I think I might have a map coming up here. And then it goes on that Philistia should have no cause for rejoicing, the last part of chapter 14, verses 28 through 32. So that covers these two chapters, the oracle against Babylon, and then we have this judgment on Philistine. Here's this map that's in your book, and let's just point out a few of these countries. Again, the projector's not having, but here's Philistia that I was talking about. Here's Judah, here's Philistia. We're now going to be talking about some judgments on other nations. This next one we'll get into is Moab. We know Moab and Ammon were sons of Lot, and they had territory, and they were bitter enemies of the Israel or Judah throughout their time. We've got Edom here, who was the son of Esau. We know that. Here's Syria up here, and we're going to read a judgment on Damascus. Damascus is the capital of Syria. Damascus is kind of located where the laser pointer is. So hopefully you remember this geography and where these other countries are located at that we're going to read about the judgments. Let's go to chapter 15 now, and now talk about the judgment against, or the oracle against Moab.
Rocky, yes. Pass in Noah 14:12, because I know people are going to run across this.
Okay.
In the King James, New King James, it says Lucifer. This is a classic verse that supposedly people use to talk about Satan's fall from heaven. As you pointed out, it's all about Babylon. So just to know about that, and to know what you're saying about Babylon, that's the context of the statement. Nothing about Satan.
Yeah. So, good point, Steve. There's so many details of this thing, but that's probably one that you come across. This is why context is so important, and this is a judgment of Babylon. What does the devil have to do with, you know, in the star of morning, the son of dawn is going to fall. Who's he talking about? He's talking about the king of Babylon here. How you have fallen from heaven. Who is that? That's the king of Babylon, and he's being referred to, and New American Standard has the word star. So glad you pointed that out. Okay, chapter 15, an oracle against Moab. Two chapters, 15 and 16. Now, when you look at all these different prophecy against all these nations, the judgment against Moab is exceeded in length only by the ones against Babylon and Egypt. And so that tells us a lot about that. We know through history that Moab and Israel, or you want to call Judah, they were bitter enemies from the beginning of their history. And there's many things throughout Scripture that's talked about Moab. I gave you a scripture to read. I'll just read it in class. Zephaniah, I'm going to read chapters 2, 8 through 9. Just listen to me about the enmity that was between Israel and Moab. Zephaniah 2, starting in verse 8, says, I have heard the taunting of Moab and the revilings of the sons of Ammon, which they have taunted my people and become arrogant against their territory. Therefore, as I live, declares the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, surely Moab will be like Sodom, and the sons of Ammon like Gomorrah, a place possessed by nettles and salt pits, and a perpetual desolation. The remnant of my people will plunder them, and the remainder of my nation will inherit them. And so we find here that, they were definitely a very, very bitter enemies. Let's read verse 1. It says, 15:1. It says, the oracle concerning Moab. Surely in a night, Ar of Moab is devastated and ruined. Surely in a night, Ker of Moab is devastated and ruined. So here you start becoming with a geography, Ar and Ker. And these are cities in Moab. And Ar happens to be the most northern city, And Kerr happens to be the most southern city. And so here we find just a sweeping judgment from the top of the country all the way to the bottom of the country is where they're going to have desolation. Or in essence, it's going to be the entire country. Now you start in verse 2. Verses 2 through 4, you're going to have 13 cities mentioned. And again, these are all cities of Moab. So this tells you several things. One, Isaiah was familiar with it. He can write about it. And familiar with the surrounding people. And not only people, with their customs and practices and so forth. Let's just read verses 2 through 4. They have gone up to the temple and to Dibon, one of the cities, even to the high places to weep. Moab wails over Nebo and Medeba. Everyone's head is bald and every beard is cut off. And in their streets they have girded themselves with sackcloth, and on their housetops and in their squares, everyone is wailing, dissolved in tears. Heshbon and Eleth also cry out. Their voice is heard all the way to Jahaz. Therefore the armed men of Moab cry aloud. Their soul trembles within them. And so you see widespread weeping and agony. And even the armed men, their military men, are crying because of this desolation. Now let's look at verse 5. Very interesting verse. And it's always important when we pick up these things. Hopefully when you do the multiple readings, you'll start picking up things maybe you didn't see here. Look at verse 5. It says, my heart cries out for Moab. What is that telling us? My heart. Isaiah is the writer, right? Moab was a bitter enemy of Judah and of Israel. He sees this vision. He's writing about it. He's terrified about it, right? He's feeling for the people, right? He's having pity on the Moabs, of course, way in the future when this thing's going to happen. Don't know when exactly. He's crying out for the people. We talked about this, I think, when we first started our class, that Isaiah was a man full of love, love for people. It wasn't just his own Jews. He was concerned about all people, and this shows us how he's concerned about it. He's concerned about this judgment. And you're going to find that in several places in the book of Isaiah, that Isaiah was a man, was a tender man, and a sensitive heart, sensitive about people and their salvation and their wellness. And so you find him crying out here. Okay, let's go on now to the next section. Actually, some of these sub-points here, the devastation will be so severe over the whole land. We kind of covered that reading these several verses. Now let's look at chapter 16, and let's read verses 1 and 2. Again, still about Moab. Let's read verse 1. It says, send the tribute lamb to the ruler of the land, from Selah by the way of the wilderness to the mountain of the daughter of Zion. Verse 2, then, like fleeing birds or scattered nestlings, the daughters of Moab will be at the fords of Arnon. Isaiah is a tough book. When you read it, you say, well, I'm reading that. I don't understand what's happening here. Let me suggest what's happening here is as you see here, as I have on the overhead, is a plea for mercy. Isaiah, through his writings and the rulers here, he's saying, send a tribute lamb to who? To the Israelites. To what? To provide them refuge. See, they're going to be scattered. They're fleeing. They're scattering like nestlings. Why? Because of the persecutions. And it says they're all gathered at the fjords of Arnon. Arnon is one of the rivers. It was in the boundary, one of the boundaries of the country of Ammon. And so they're at the, you know, they'll be at the river. And so here's a plea for mercy. Now the question is this country going to accept the plea? And the answer is no. Drop down to, verse 6. So there's a plea of mercy. And of course, writing this in the future. And of course, he's already predicting what the people are going to do. Verse 6. We have heard of the pride of Moab, an excessive pride, even of his arrogance, pride, and fury. His idle boasts are false. Therefore, Moab shall wail. Everyone of Moab shall wail. You shall moan for the raisin cakes of Kir Harsheth as those who are utterly stricken. So basically, they're not going to send this tribute. They're not going to ask for mercy. Why aren't they going to do it? Because they're just full of pride. In the middle of verse 7, it talks about these raisin cakes. This is just a kind of a passing note. Evidently, this country was known for their pastries, these raisin cakes. They were well known throughout the world. There's a lot of historical information about that. And they're going to be moaning for these raisin cakes, but they're not going to be there in that country because of the persecution. So here we find that this country had an excessive amount of pride. And other prophets have wrote about their pride of Moab. I'll read from you from Jeremiah chapter 48 and 2 verses 29 and 42. You had that as you're reading. Jeremiah said in 48, 29, we have heard of the pride of Moab. He is very proud. of his haughtiness, his pride, his arrogance, and his self-exaltation. In verse 42, and Moab will destroy for being a people because he has become arrogant. Note this, arrogant toward the Lord. Again, these judgments are just. They're severe. And the people could have changed. But how they treated the Lord and how they were prideful and arrogant. So God is holding them accountable. Look at verse 9. Again, we find this thing about Isaiah weeping. It says, therefore, verse 9, I will weep bitterly. Here's Isaiah. Who's weeping? Isaiah is weeping. Therefore, I will weep bitterly for Jazer and for the vine of Sibmah. And I will drench you with my tears, O Heshbron and Eleth, for the shouting over the summer fruits and your harvest has fallen away. Again, just kind of reemphasizing the point that we made earlier. Okay, and let's, the last two verses of the chapter, so we're in 16:13, says, this is the word which the Lord spoke earlier concerning Moab. But now the Lord speaks, saying, within 3 years, as a hired man would count them, the glory of Moab will be degraded along with his great population, and his remnant will be very small and impotent. And so we find a time frame, it's going to happen very, very shortly. You ask yourself, who is it that's going to be assaulting them? Likely Assyria. When Assyria attacked the northern kingdom, took it away, attacked Judah, took a lot of the cities. They also took other countries. And we'll see that Assyria assaulted many other nations. Okay, so let's go on to chapter 17. Question? Okay, we're almost out of time. We'll stop at chapter 17. Let's go to the end of our lesson here and pick up some lessons, practical application. So how do we take what we've just studied and what you've read and how can we apply this information to our lives? First of all, the first lesson is the one having to do with pride and arrogance. Moab, we just talked about that. Remember the prophet Isaiah talked about, we've heard the pride of Moab and excessive pride. This is a problem that we as brethren can have. We'll find that it's not only a fault with Moab, but we're going to find as we study these other nations, a lot of nations were brought into judgment because of pride. They weren't giving God the recognition that he was in control. He was bringing them against the different countries that he's going to bring about them. And so we need to think about ourselves. What about our pride in ourselves, our nation, our technology, our military, our prosperity? Do we get a point in time that we are so blessed, it seems like our blessings just keep increasing, In most cases, do we start then becoming prideful, not recognizing who the source of our blessings are? We sure don't want to be in the state of where Moab is, and the nation as a whole. What about our nation? Do we give we need to be concerned that our nation gives proper acknowledgement of who's in control, who's in control, and that, of course we know that is God. So we can work on this, but we got to be careful we don't fall in the same trap that Moab did. The last thing, I think, lesson we see here, as we've already talked about earlier, is that God expects all nations to be subject to him. He expects them to obey his will, and he will hold them accountable for their iniquities. And that's true for this nation. We should not think because we so-called Christian nation that God won't bring judgment against the United States of America. He might because of their iniquities, because of their pride. And so we need to do our part and recognize that, God is in control. All men are going to be held accountable. Rulers are going to be held accountable for their actions. This is a lesson we find, throughout the Bible, and again, it's being reemphasized here in Isaiah. Okay, so we didn't finish this morning. We'll pick up here and cover the next section. So our goal is to get through chapters 27. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that on Wednesday. So, we're covering 15 chapters and 2 lessons. So this section here, we're skipping over a lot of material here, but we need to do that to be able to finish Isaiah in the 3-month time frame. Okay, thank you for your good attention.